Okay, first of all, I want to welcome you back to shiur number, what is this, 4, not including Rabbi Yaakovson, for those of you who were here last week to hear. There are more, yes, to hear Rabbi Yaakovson. If you were here, it was really a treat to hear him. He was, you know, people told me that, especially he was in Hebrew, but his Hebrew was not particularly difficult. It was good. And the translator, Rabbi Unger, was excellent. He was excellent.
Except for the few editorial comments.
His editorial comments, right, that was fine. So today, I want to talk about the concept of, let's say you're a soldier, and you're given orders, and you believe the orders to be against halacha. So must you obey the orders as part of the army, or do you ignore the orders? And I think we've all seen, films. There's a very famous play that was turned into a movie with Tom Cruise about this specific question. Remember the name of the play? It's a very well-known play. A Few Good Men. Correct. That's a very, very good... Right. About that particular issue. You're given orders, and the orders are against the law, against the code, in favor of the code, against the code. Do you follow orders, or are you supposed to act on your own? That's a very, very difficult question. So it's clear. We're going to make an assumption. The assumption is that the halacha is against disengaging, kicking Jude out of Jewish land. Okay? We've discussed that assumption for the past few weeks, and it's not an assumption that we can take for granted. Some say yes. Everybody in the religious Zionist camp says it's totally yasser. Other people say, not so clear. But we're just going to take it for granted today. Assuming that it was yasser, and the government tells you, the prime minister gave you an order to disengage, to remove Jews, should you follow that command or not? So we're going to go through the Navi. And the Navi is going to lead us to a Gemara, and the Gemara is going to lead us to a Rambam. But it's interesting to look at the stories in the Navi and see what the Gemara says about them. Okay. There was a man named Yoav ben Tseruya. Who was Yoav ben Tseruya? Can anybody tell me?
Saul, first.
No, that was Abner. That was Abner ben Ner.
But he was David.
David. Yoav ben Tseruya was David Hamelech's general. Okay. He was Yoav ben Tseruya's general throughout. Remember who else? Who did Yoav kill? Remember who Yoav killed?
He killed the general from...
Abner killed Yoav's brother, Asael. So Yoav then killed... Yeah. We're not up to that. We didn't get to it yet.
Yeah.
Yoav then killed Abner ben Ner. Correct. So Yoav was a general for David, but, there was always a tension between David and his general, Yoav.
I thought he was very loyal to
Yoav. Let's see. Rashmuah ba'a ad Yoav... Okay, Yoav found out, this is from the book of Melachim. Melachim is after David's dead, and who took over? Shlomo. It wasn't always clear that Shlomo was going to take over. Sometimes some people thought it was going to be Absalom for a while, and he got killed. Then there was another movement to appoint Adoniah, a different son of David, a brother of Shlomo. But finally Shlomo got the job. Shmuah ba ad Yoav, ki Yoav nata acharei Adoniah, Vachare Absalom lo nata. So Yoav was not in the Shlomo camp. He was the one that thought Adoniah should be the king. Vayanas Yoav el ohol moeh el ohol Hashem vayichazek bekarnos hamizbeach. So Yoav, for some reason, as we'll soon see, knew he was in trouble. So he tried to play the old sanctuary rule. You know what sanctuary? You run into God's home. He ran into the Mishkan.
Nobody.
And he grabbed onto the Mizbeach. And he figured, if as long as I'm grabbing onto these Mizbeach,
nobody can
kill me. Because he figured they're going to come and kill me. But Yugal the Melech Shlomo, Ki Nas Yoav Elo Al Hashem, Pasuk Chav Tes 29. It was told to the king Shlomo that Yoav fled to the Mishkan. V'hinei Eishel HaMizbeach. And he's next to the Mizbeach, the altar. V'yishlach Shlomo et Benayahu ben Yehoda Leimor, Lech Pegabo. So Shlomo said to his right-hand man, Benayahu, said to him, go kill him. He's in the Mizbeach. He's holding on to the Mizbeach. So what? Kill him anyway. Okay. Vayavo b'nayav al ol Hashem vayomer elav. So said b'nayav to him. Ko amar ha-melech, say. The king says, leave. Vayomer lo, ki po amuz. He says, I'm not leaving. I'll die here. Vayashav b'nayahu el ha-melech davar lemor. Ko diber yolav v'cho anani. So b'nayav doesn't know what to do. Should I kill him? Should I not kill him? I told him to leave the Mishkan. He refuses to leave the house of God, and it's a desecration to kill a man in the house of God. Vayomer lo amelech. Ashei kasher diber upagabo ukivarto. Do what I told you to do, and kill him and bury him. Vashivota dumei chinam asher shafach yoav me'alai u'me'al beit avi. And you know what you should do? You should remove the innocent blood that Yoav spilled from me and from my family, from my household. And God should, how does it write it? And the Lord shall return his blood upon his own head, meaning avenge the blood. Asher paga b'shnei anashim tzadikim b'tovim mimenu v'yahargein b'charev. That he killed two men that were better than him, and he killed them with a sword. V'avid avi lo yada. And my father didn't know. Who did he kill? Et Avner ben Ner Shar Tzva Yisrael, that Amashar ben Yeter Tzva Yuda. Shar Tzva Yuda. See, he killed Avner, and he killed Amasa. Now, if you want to know about the killing of Avner, we'll learn about it. We're almost up to it. This Shabbos, we're going to get to it. Next Shabbos, we're going to get to it, because this Shabbos is a special speaker. Okay? So he killed these two people, and he killed them when they were innocent, so therefore he deserves to die. What? We'll see in a second. And their blood should return thereafter on the head of Yoav and the head of his children forever. But it should be peace for David. Meaning, I don't take out this grudge against Yoav. My household will bear responsibility. So what did Benayahu do? What did he do? He went up into the Mishkan. He hit him. He killed him. And they buried him in his house. Yeah, it's interesting. I always wonder why they can't just drag him out. You know, you get enough guys to drag the guy out. He's holding on to him. He's there for drag him out. They don't want to do that. They wanted to kill him then and there. So the real question is, it comes up, who did Yoav kill? Avner and Amasa. Who did he kill him? And why is he responsible? So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, on Daf Memtes, Sanhedrin 49. The Gemara wants to know first about Avner. So if you recall the story of Avner, why did he kill Yoav kill Avner?
Because it was a conflict with he was going to become general. David promised him if he joined. I mean, he offered to bring his Jews in.
Right.
So then David promised him to become a general.
Correct. Well, that's not clear. What's the real reason why Yoav killed Avner?
His son, his brother.
Right. Avner killed his brother Asahel. Where is it? Asahel. So Avner, in revenge, he went ahead and he killed Avner. Yoav killed Avner. The names are hard to keep straight. Okay? So that's one. The second thing, the Gemara says, very, very fascinating story. Memtes. Gemara says, "My time katalte Amasa." So they asked Yoav, "Why did you kill Amasa?" Well, let's look at the story of Amasa. Okay, look at the story of Amasa. Skip to page 2. Source number 4. Vayomer Hamelech el Amasa. The king said to Amasa, "Hashekli et ish Yehudah shloshet yamim." Amasa was a general, so he says, go call the army. There was a guy back in Sheba ben Bichri that the king David wanted to get rid of. He had to go fight him. So go get the army. Get the men together. Pasuk Hey. Vayelach Amasa lahazik et Yehuda. So Amasa went to go round up the troops of Judah. Vayochar min hamoed asher yado. But he was later than the set time which he had assigned to him. Amasa didn't show up on time. Amasa came late. So, what happens? Vayomer David el Avishai, Ata yeira lanu Sheba ben Bichri min Avshalom. Now the Sheba ben Bichri does more harm than Avshalom did. Ata kach et avdei Adonecha u'udov acharav kemasal lo arim b'tzirot v'hitzil einenu. Until einenu. So he says, now go take your servants and pursue after him. Let him get himself fortified cities and escape us. Okay. So David sent Yoav, meaning Amasa was supposed to go catch him. He didn't do it. He didn't come back in time. So David said, you know what? You, Yoav, go. You take care of it. Okay? So they went to go chase after Sheba ben Bichri. Chet, eight. Heim im ha'evan ha'gdola asher b'givon v'amasah bar lifneihem. Right, they were at this great stone in Gibbon, Amasa is coming. V'yoav chagor midolu b'ushol v'alav chagor cheren b'tzumet amatna b'ta'ara v'hu yatsa b'tipol. Yoav was girded with his coat, his usual garment, and upon it was a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins, and as he went forth, it fell out, his sword fell out. V'yomer Yoav la'amasa. So his sword fell out of his holster, and it's like on the ground somewhere. So Yoav said to Amasa, ha'shalom ata'achi. Hey, my friend, how you doing? Sit over here. Well, you could be on the set for a second. Okay? All right? Vatochaz yad yumin Yoav says, hey, my friend, how you doing? Amasa and Yoav are on the same side, right? Right? Hey, my friend, how you doing? Vatochaz yad yumin Yoav bizkan Amasa l'nasoklo. So he takes his... Bradley, where's your beard? Takes his hand and grabs his beard to give him a kiss. How you doing? I love you, my friend. Nice to see you. Long time no see. V'amasa lo nismar b'cherv asher v'yad Yoav. Yoav, on the other hand, he's holding him with his beard. He had a sword on the other hand. V'ayakehu ba el ha-chomesh. What's the chomesh? Fifth rib. Okay. The death cut. V'yishpoch me'av arza. His guts fell out onto the ground. V'lo shana v'yamot. And he struck him not again, and he died. What?
What a mess.
It's very messy. It's very messy. You know, Star Wars made me think of this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Betrayal and this guy and that guy. You know what I mean? Okay. So Yoav kills the other general. So the question is, why in the world did Yoav kill Amasa? So what do you think the simple answer is? What did Amasa do wrong? He was late. He killed him. Why were you late? You know, you come on time or I'll kill you. This is how we run the military. Dov Sherrison is looking funny. Why? You know, that's an interesting idea. Back to page one. You cut off a lot of your politics. You get that? Okay. Yeah. So one second. So one of the reasons why Shlomo HaMelech, the son of David, had Yoav killed was because he killed this man Amasa.
Yeah, but his father told him to do it.
David told Yoav to kill Amasa? No, go kill Sefer Benichri, my enemy. Not my general. Kill my enemy. You understand?
Uh-oh.
Right, so one of the reasons why David's son had Yoav killed, had Yoav killed, is because he killed Amasa. So the question really is, why did Yoav have Amasa killed? Says the Gemara. They asked him, my time katle katalte la Amasa. Do me a favor. Why in the world, I'm on page one, source number two. Why in the world did you kill Amasa? Says the Gemara, Amar Le, Amasa Morid B'Malchus Ava. Amasa was Morid B'Malchus. What does Morid B'Malchus mean? He rebelled against the king. The king gave him a direct order. Be here in 3 days. And he wasn't. So you'll say it was a little harsh. That might be true, and that might not be true. We don't know what the situation in the military was. You have to keep a certain order. Fine. The rule is, the halacha is, if the king tells you to do something and you disobey, you're gone. Now, you know, the king definitely, I would say, has leeway whether to impose this judgment or not. But he has the right to impose it. So one could ask, well, does Yoav have the right to impose the judgment or not? It's a different question. So Amasa was Morid B'Malchus. Dichtiv, as it is written, Vayomer HaMelech LaAmasa, Hazekli et Ish Yehuda Shloset Yamin, be back in 3 days with the men. Vayelech Amasa lahazik et Yehuda vayuchar. But Amasa was late, so that's why I killed him. You know why I killed him. He was late. You got to keep order in the military. If you don't keep the men in order, you've got hefker.
Anarchy.
And it's very interesting that he pointed that out. That, and he was willing to, or, you know, he felt the need to impose the death penalty on a general for shirking his duty.
But who imposed the death penalty?
Yoav did.
Right.
Now, the real question is, Yoav, let's assume Yoav is not necessarily a bad guy. Yoav was a faithful servant of David. Mm-hmm. Why would Yoav do such a thing? So he must have really, you know, Amasa was also on his side. So unless you assume that he's a raving maniac, which we do not assume. So why would Yoav do that?
Out of deference to the king, he's so loyal to him, and if this is the law,
mm-hmm.
you are, by your direct disobedience to the the Malchut, you are destroying the whatever the hierarchy is, whatever the reign is. You don't know why. A lot of times, soldiers don't know why they have to do something. They're not, you know, it's do first and then, you know, shoot first, ask questions later.
Correct.
So this man was so loyal to David, he didn't even question whether David was doing the right thing or the wrong thing. He just said, you were supposed to be here in 3 days. You didn't. That's it.
I would say the whole hierarchy of a military establishment is predicated upon the ability of soldiers to follow orders.
But nobody was ordering him right at that time to kill him.
David said, well, okay. You want to argue, was Yoav beyond, acting beyond his bounds? He was acting beyond his bounds. That's clear. Hold on a second. But his, it seems clear that he felt that his role as a general was the need to impose order, military order. Because without it, you have nothing. You have rebellion. Yeah.
Shlomo didn't see it that way. Shlomo was putting him to death for doing this.
Correct.
Yeah, but isn't
well, the Gemara is going to say what they're arguing about.
His father asked him to kill him after he died.
His father did leave vague instructions to make sure Yoav doesn't make it. You know what I'm saying? His father couldn't necessarily say he could put him to death, but he was very angry at him for a couple of things that he did.
Didn't he himself disobey his father?
Who, Shlomo?
No, not Shlomo. I'm talking about Yoav. Disobeyed David.
Yoav disobeyed David. Why?
When he told him to be with Absalom, to kill Absalom and kill
him. We'll talk about it when we get there. Okay. Are you reading ahead in the Navi?
No.
Okay. No kidding. I'm just joking. You could read ahead. Yeah, Mary had a question.
So here we are. I've already said you're supposed to follow one question. I believe that's what you're supposed to do. So how do we rationalize that with the line, I was only following orders?
Well, we'll get to that. Excellent question. Excellent question. Next. So the question is, why did he say yes? Because he was like Omar Leh. So they said back to him, they said back to Yoav in the Gemara. The Gemara is now recording the conversation before they put Yoav to death. Amasa achin v'rakin darash. Amasa was learning out the word ach in the Torah. Amasa had a different understanding than you did. Why? What did Amasa say? What happened? When David sent Amasa to go bring back the fighting men of Yehuda to go, you know, round up the troops, when Amasa got to the people of Yehuda, he saw that they had just started learning a Masechta. They were learning Torah. Amar, he says, Kol ish asher yimre et picha, v'lo yishma et dvarecha l'chol asher tetzavenu yumat. Right? In Yehoshua, God tells Yehoshua, anyone who doesn't listen to what you say shall be put to death. He says, but yachol afilu lidivrei Torah. You might think that the same is true. Afilu lidivrei Torah. In this context, it means even to negate the words of Torah. Talmud lomar rak chazak v'amatz. What are the words rak chazak v'amatz? The very next words are rak, just only chazak v'amatz. Says Amasa. What do you mean only? Just be strong. So the word only must be coming to teach you something. Only teaches you there are limits to the king's power. What is the limit of the king's power? What cannot a king order a person to do? In his case, stop the mitzvah, but in a broader sense, negate a mitzvah in the Torah. The king can command you to do anything except go against the mitzvah. Look at Rashi. See Rashi on the right-hand side? Ashkechan Shemat Sa'an, he came and he found them, Shahayu Asukin B'Maseches. They were learning. V'loratza Levatlan. And he didn't want to stop them. He didn't want to interrupt them. Kinevifarish V'Azil. De'eno Moreid B'Malchus. That's not Moreid B'Malchus. That's not rebelling against the king. Dechiv, as it is written, Rak Chazak V'Amatz. Rak, just be strong. Rakin, meaning the word rak, the word rak can be used. Mi'utin. A mi'ut means it's an exclusion, coming to exclude something. If the king comes to you and says, you shouldn't follow this particular mitzvah, you're out of luck. Right? The king has a certain level of authority, but that authority has limits. What's the limit? The limit is going against the Torah. In the language of the Gemara on Daf Chav Tes, the Gemara says, Divrei HaRav. Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mishomim. Right? Divrei Rav means the master says something and the student says something. So who do you listen to? Right. So for example, let's say, you know, somebody comes to Howard and says, Howard, I want you to, should I leave you out of this? Okay. Howard, his knees mother. Yeah, Howard, I want you to kill so-and-so. Class is showing, right? I want you to kill so-and-so. So Howard goes and does it. And then he says, I didn't do it on my own. I'm not responsible. I only did it because so-and-so told me to do it. It's only father's mother. So says the Torah, no, Divrei HaRav, Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mishomin. God said no. Some guy told you yes? Right? Who's responsible to whom? So you have to listen to God's commandments. So why did Shlomo HaMelech have Yoav killed? Yoav said, hey, I was only following orders. He was married by Malchus. Said Shlomo, no, he wasn't married by Malchus. Why was he not married by Malchus? Because he found people learning. He wasn't going to negate the Torah in order to fulfill orders. Now, by the way, just as an aside, this raises fascinating issues about
going to the army,
right, which I don't want to get into at all. Correct. This raises very, very fascinating issues about learning whether a person should engage in Torah study or going to the army. Now, I think, by the way, from the Gemara, it seems very clear that learning trumps army.
Right, I was just going to say, what happens if they would have found the people on market day,
they were in
the market, not learning Saturday.
Goodbye, go. Right, but it seems to indicate that a person should learn. And I would acknowledge, by the way, even in the Dati Lu'umi camp, the Rude Zionist camp, they have people that learn almost exclusively. It's called a program called Hezder Merkaz. What's Hezder Merkaz? You learn for 9.5 years, and then you go in the army for like 3 months. You already have like 8 kids. You know what I'm saying? That's called Hezder Merkaz. And people do it, even in the religious Zionist camp. The big argument is, the reason why the religious camp doesn't, the right-wing camp doesn't enter the army, isn't necessarily only because they don't believe in army service, more it's because the army is a destructive environment spiritually. And I think that everybody would agree that not everybody is cut out to learn all day, every day. The question is the army, is that a good environment to send people to? And, you know, to support the state and things like that. But everybody agrees, based on this Gemara, that if you could learn full-time, that that's an important value, and that learning would trump going into the army. Do you look at that, somebody say? No. Okay. So, but we're left with the underlying principle that if you're given an order, and the order is to violate a rule in the Torah, don't do it. Don't do it.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
What does the coins say before they go into battle because I'm leaving? Doesn't he?
He says anyone's afraid.
Number one, anybody that is afraid should go home.
Right.
Gets and
correct. If you got married or you built a house or you planted a vineyard.
Anybody that's sitting there and learning should stay home.
Well, they didn't come to the battlefield.
They never made it
that far. You should just know, there are a lot of interesting Gemaras about this topic, that Yehoshua, some say that some of the tribes were learning and the other ones were fighting. It seems clear from the Gemara that Yehoshua used to learn by night and fight during the day. Although, I don't know, he must have been exhausted. I don't really know. Okay? So, can you think of other examples in the Tanakh, in Bible, where it seems that a person was given an order that he should not have followed? Two very, very well-known examples. Anyone?
Where the person did follow the order?
Did. Yes, two examples.
What about ordering, David ordered the husband of Bathsheba to be front man for the front, it's putting in the front.
Very good, very good. David HaMelech, very good. That's one of the stories. One of the two stories, the most famous stories, is the very famous story of David and Bathsheba that we're going to get to later on in the year. David had a relationship with this woman, Bathsheba, while her husband was at the front. There are problems with this story on so many different levels. Okay? She gets pregnant. She's pregnant. They're in big trouble. David calls Uriah HaChiti back home and tells him, go be with your wife. Uriah says, no, how could I go be with my wife? I've got my friends at the front. I'm staying here. David pushes the he won't go. He absolutely will not. He ignores the king. He will not go. So David has to get rid of Uriah. So he sends Uriah with a letter, with a sealed letter, like in his hand, as a message to the general. And in the letter, the message is, send Uriah to the front. No, send him to the front. I.e., kill him.
Get him killed.
Send him to his death. And what does the general do? Who is the general, by the way? By the name of? Yoav ben Tzeruya. Right? Yoav ben Tzeruya follows orders. Uriah Achiti is dead.
Would it be
Bar
the Malchus if he didn't?
So what do you think? The king orders you to have a certain person sent to the front to die. For what you know, it would seem like
it's against the Torah.
So you have to say no. Imagine the pressure. Your direct superior orders you to do something that you know to be morally wrong. So the tension is terrible. I mean, that's really what this movie was about, what A Few Good Men was about. It's about when your superior officer orders you to do something, and the code is follow orders.
How does that fit into Jonathan Pollard? It's another issue.
What do you mean?
He sees things that are morally wrong and tells Israel what's going on. They're not getting the information they're supposed to be getting.
Yeah.
He's not following the Navy's orders.
Well, isn't his job to disobey orders going up to chain of command as opposed to spying on his country? Meaning his job is to go back to his superior officer and say, hey, what's going on? And make, you know, you're right. And he's supposed to risk a lot in order to make a stink about it.
Both the Jews are too upset about gas, poison gas.
I don't know. You know, it's Akasha. Okay, I don't want to get into that. Yeah, throw it with peril. So what's the other example? So that's one example. The one example was David and Bathsheba and Uriah Achiti. What's the other example? Another example where king orders something that's clearly usher. Clearly unjustified. We learned it.
It's when Shaul ordered the destruction of the city.
Very good. Shaul orders the destruction of Melv Ir HaKohanim. If you recall, and this made me think of a little movie last night also, right? That David ran away from Shaul. Shaul went nuts, basically, and is convinced that David HaMelech, that David, before he was the king, had rebelled against him. David ran away. He runs to the city of Nov. He sells the coin. He's starving to death. The coin gives him some bread, and he runs away. He runs on his way. Shaul comes to the king. Turn to page, where is this? So, I think that's on page 2. Vayomer elav Shaul. Shaul comes to the head kohen, and he says to him, Lama kashartem alai ata uven Yishai. You and this Ben Yishai guy have plotted against me. It's amazing, parallel. V'kitzchalo lechem v'cherev. You gave him a sword and bread. You asked God, and God told you to rebel against me, to rise up against me. Achimelech et Hamelech vayomar. Achimelech answered him and said, Umi b'chol avadecha k'David ne'aman, v'chatan Hamelech. What are you talking about? David's your servant. He's your son-in-law, for God's sake. V'shal mishma'atecha v'nichbad b'beitecha. He does whatever you tell him to do, and he's very honored in your household. Hayom achiloti lishalo belohim chalilali. God, I'm going against you. God forbid. Ah, Yashem Hamelech v'avdo davar b'chol beit avi. Don't put this on my house. I didn't do anything wrong. Kilo yada abdecha b'chol zot davar katan u'gadol. I didn't know anything about this. Shaul has this vendetta against David. Nobody else knows. So all of a sudden, you help out David, and you're a traitor. You're treasoning. That's not a word, but that's okay. You're a treasonous traitor. That's a word. Thank you. Okay. Tesvav, Tesvayin, Tesvay 16. Vayomer Hamelech, Mos Tamush Achimelech, Ata B'chol Beit Avicha. You, Achimelech, you will be put to death. You and your whole household. Vayomer Hamelech L'Rachim Anitzavim Alav. To the servants who are standing there, Shobu V'Amitu Kohanei Hashem. Go kill all the priests. Kigam Yadam in David. They're with David. They knew that he's running away from me and they didn't tell me anything. Very important line. We sort of glossed over it the last time. Shaul turns to his servants and he says, kill him. And what do they do?
They don't.
Oh man, you might be the king, but no way. Right. Who was the Avdei HaMelech? Who would you think Saul would first turn to and say, kill him? His chief of staff. His soldiers, his head of state. Was who was?
Abner
ben Ner. So what does he do? Vayomer HaMelech LeDoeg, Doeg HaAdomi, Doeg the Red. Not so good. So vata upaga b'kohanim. You do it. He had his apprentice, Doeg Sif. Vayisov Doeg HaAdomi, Vayifkahu b'kohanim. So Doeg went to the temple, and he killed out the priests. Vayamad Bayomahu Smona Shmonim V'chamisha Ish Nosei Efod Bad. He killed 85 people. Men, women, and children, and animals wiped out the whole city. Doeg HaAdomi. Except, Shaul gave a direct order. Direct order. We sometimes we minimize that pasuk. And he told them what to do, and he commanded that they do it. No way. And they said no. So Yoav, he disobeyed a direct order. Avner ben Ner disobeyed a direct order when his conscience told him it was not appropriate. And Yoav, what did Yoav do? Yoav, the servant of David, when he was given an order that was morally questionable, he followed it blindly. And what about Amasa, when he's given an order and he feels that it contradicts the Torah? He delays correctly. And who's killing whom? Yoav, the person who follows orders, killed both Amasa and he killed Avner. Back to the Gemara on page 1.
But it's interesting that the retribution afterward, but Shaul didn't immediately, there's no mention here of any consequences.
None whatsoever. Right.
Which is bizarre. He just went to
somebody else's. You do it, right.
And we don't hear anything.
Which means?
That Shaul probably knew what he was asking was immoral.
Correct.
And he couldn't punish these people.
Correct.
And he couldn't make examples of them.
Correct.
How weird.
Yeah.
He went ahead and did it anyway.
Correct. We didn't stop on that when we learned it. We did not talk about that. Okay. Back to the bottom of the Gemara on page number 1. It says, Shlomo said, go kill him. Go kill that guy, Yoav, hanging on to the Mizbeach, right? That general, go kill him. Ve'heshiv Hashem edomo al rosho. And God should return and avenge his blood on his head. Asher paga b'shne anashim, tzadikim. He killed two innocent, righteous people. Ve'tovim mimenu. Two people that were better than him. So what does that mean that were better than him? Tovim, shahayu dorshin achim v'rakim. They were the ones, dorshin achim v'rakim means, they were the ones that put the Torah above the king. Vahu lo darash. And he did not. When he was given an order, he followed. Tzadikim, they were righteous. Shehem bepeh. They were given direct verbal commandments. Right? Shaul told Avner, go kill the king, the Kohanim, go kill the priests. But by now, it's verbally. No. David tells Amasa, go get the guys. Well, they're learning, I can't get them. Vahu below Asu, and they didn't follow orders. Vahu beigeret, and he gets a letter from David, you know, in writing, Asa. Not even a direct order. There's not even the personal, you know, anything in writing you can reinterpret. Or, you know, I want you to send him to the front lines. Oh, I thought you meant for me to send him to the front lines to get a message across or something. Now, when you're given a direct order, when the king gives you a direct order to your face, right, you know, you've worked as Stephen, the chain of command. When you get a direct order from someone face to face, so then ignoring that order or contradicting that order
is insubordination.
As opposed to if it's written, what if it was a written order?
Still insubordination.
Is it harder or easier when it's direct face to face as opposed to if it's written? Or it doesn't matter.
When you're doing a service, the direct orders don't come from the captain goes down the line.
Right, goes person to person.
Goes down the line, the chain of command.
Right.
You don't deal with the higher up officers directly.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from the captain to the sergeant to the corporal to the private.
Which really comes into that comes into Miriam's question, because the private's the one that has to do it. Meaning, in some ways, morally questionable orders are easier to follow if you're not actually carrying them out. If I'm the major and the colonel gives me the order and I just have to pass it on to the captain, it's a very, very different thing for me to just pass on the order and give the order as opposed to doing it. Doing it is much harder to do. So based on all these Gemaras, these stories, so we see we have two stories of men that did not follow orders, and the Gemara considers them righteous, and one man who did follow orders against the Torah, and the Gemara says, got what was coming to him. Based on all this, look at the Rambam. Rambam's on the second page. Says Rambam, Hamavatel gzeirat hamelech bishvil shenit ashek b'mitzvot, a person who negates or who does not fulfill a commandment of the king so that he can engage in mitzvot, afilu b'mitzvah kala, even a small mitzvah, arezeh patur. Okay? Then he's exempt. He did not rebel against the king. Divrei harav, divrei ha'eved, because if the master says something and the slave, the servant says something, divrei harav kodmin. Who's the master in this case? God. If God said something and the kid said something, God's word comes first. Meaning, the king tells you, a very interesting question, but the king tells you, or the order comes down, go clean the toilets. And it's time to daven. Right? You got to daven first. Just so you know, in theory, the Israeli army, for the religious people, they're supposed to, by law, give them time to fulfill their religious requirements. The only problem is it becomes very, very difficult if you speak to the soldiers. No, during combat, so everything's out the window. The difficult part is the army leaves you no time to breathe. So the pressure is your non-religious friends, they've got 27 or 24 minutes off. And you have 24 minutes to daven. So your inclination is, there's so many things that you want to do. You want to make a phone call to your parents. You want to go to the bathroom. You know what I'm saying? You want to do some certain things. So the pressure becomes, when you're a soldier in the army, to daven in 20 minutes. And then it becomes 16 minutes. And before you know it, you're putting on tefillin saying Kriyat Shema and Shemoneh Esrei. Right. And then you have to go do the things that you're doing. It's just tremendous pressure to maintain a level of religiosity. And that's why, Rabbi Yaakovson was speaking about it last week, that's why Hezer is so significant, so important. It's not just that you're learning half time and then you go to the army the other rest of the time. The question is, who do you go to the army with? So if you're going with your friends and you're going within the framework of a religious institution, that's extremely different. Because you have a peer support that allows you to maintain a certain level of a standard of religiosity that otherwise is very, very difficult. I mean, statistics are really bad about many, many people. It's called datlashim. You know what a datlash stands for? Dati shalavar, dati l'sha'avar, which means it's the opposite of a bal tshuva. Dati l'sha'avar means I used to be firm. Right? And Israel is full of them, full of these datlashes. Okay.
Aren't there also platoons that are just made up of Hezbollah and Shiva?
It's interesting. The you might have noticed in the Jerusalem Post or whatever, there was a whole big thing. Because some guy in the head of personnel decided that they want to get rid of the religious only. They want it to be more mixed.
Yeah.
That shouldn't just be only religious, that it has to be intermixed.
Not just religious units.
Right. He's a religious guy, actually, which is interesting. Yeah. You were going to say that?
There's only one fallacy that I saw with some of the logic. And that's...
Logic with?
The boys not going or not fighting or whatever.
Yeah.
Or not disengaging. Many years ago, Jerry used to tell a story of how when Rabin was, prime minister or whatever, and they had similar events, he would recruit non-religious guys who didn't have any relatives who were religious, because that way they could brutalize, they could give orders, and they were...
Jerry actually told me that's exactly what they're doing now.
But
they're recruiting, taking recruits who are not religious,
right,
and have no friends or relatives who
right,
live in
the,
in,
is,
in the territory.
By the fact that these young men aren't going to go or refusing, the
disengagement will be more brutal.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Whereas having some guys in there who have some kind of seichel and a feeling for people and who would hesitate to follow that kind of an order would probably help ameliorate the situation.
Now, one second. Anybody want to respond before I respond?
I don't quite understand.
He's saying that at least it's better to have religious boys follow the order who are sensitive and who aren't going to be brutal, and who are going to be a little more understanding of the people and what they're going through.
To prevent.
That actually, you should just know that the person who is the head of the authority in charge of disengagement is a religious guy who lives in one of the settlements. Not one of these settlements, but in the settlement.
Right.
And they think he's the biggest traitor in the world. And his logic is, it's better that I do it and at least do it with a sense of compassion and understanding as opposed to exactly what you said. Somebody want to answer? Well, first of all, in this case, you're still breaking the Torah.
Your conscience?
Still lesser. Now, what are Rabakas saying? Now, his answer was different. But let's say you're given an order.
Yeah.
And his son said, I don't want baloney, none of that.
Right. I
want to.
I don't believe in that, right?
I'm going to be misareid. I'm going to, how do you translate misareid? Disobey the order.
Right.
Yeah. Right. By the way, Jerry told me he very much liked Rabakas' solution.
Well, yeah, that was a good solution. Yeah. They're not policemen, they're soldiers.
Well,
they're supposed to be defending people.
Well, no, his solution was not to disobey.
Yeah.
I can't.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Before, you know, like preemptive.
Now, it just factually, you should just know the army would never ask them to. I hope, seichel-wise, the army's not going to ask them to.
But
all this thing being said, so according to the Rambam, if you believe that it's a mitzvah, let's say according to the Rambam, you believe that it's forbidden to leave Jewish land, to abandon Jewish land, so if the army tells you, go follow these orders, absolutely you cannot. It's awesome. Now, there's another factor. Turn to the next page.
Well,
page three.
You wouldn't necessarily have to follow them. You could convince the others not to go along with it also. You wouldn't have...
Well, okay, here's the problem.
You should have a positive influence.
Here's the problem, Steve.
Oh, no,
let's say you're right. That's exactly what they're going to try to do. That's exactly what they're going to try to convince all of their friends that how can you do such a thing? It's a terrible thing. That's exactly what they're trying to do. Right? There's only one problem. What's the problem? This is from Rabbi Riskin, a former Riskin. And Rabbi Riskin takes a certain tact. And the tact is similar to that taken, if I understand correctly, by Rav Aviner. Rav Aviner is a very, very, very well-respected and beloved figure in the religious Zionist community. He lives in, where does he live? I think Moshe Matityahu, what? In Beit El. Right. Very, very highly respected man, except, of course, for his opinion on this issue. Says Rabbi Riskin. Somebody else want to read for me? Anyone? Okay, Skippy, you're volunteer.
My government voted to disengage, to leave Gaza, and to dismantle from the settlements of Gush Katif, forcing more than 8,000 citizens of Israel to leave their homes. I feel their pain. After all, I too am a proud settler citizen, feeling a profound connection to every meter of land of Ephrat, to every brick of Jerusalem stone, to every tree and flower. Our parents, in-laws, and many of our siblings live in Ephrat. Our children have built their homes and established their lives in Ephrat. Our grandchildren have grown up in Ephrat, and our dead lie in the cemetery of Ephrat. And I cannot deny the possibility that what happens in Gush Katif could just as easily happen in Ephrat. I'm not one of those settlers who believes in greater Israel, or who maintain that the land is not ours to give away. Israel has the right to arrive at a decision regarding its borders. After all, did not King Solomon give up 20 cities in the Galilee to King Hiram of Tyre? Did not Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai give up Jerusalem in order to secure from Vespasian the city of Yavne and its Sanhedrin? Hence, great remedial legal authorities like Rabbi Joseph ben Soloveitchik and Acham Obadiah had accepted the halakhic possibility of the government ceding parts of the land of Israel.
I can just summarize. Then he asks a bunch of different questions, saying that this idea of disengagement is really crazy politically. Okay, it doesn't make any sense. So skip down to the third column, halfway down. Having asked my questions, I'm nonetheless committed to carrying out the decisions of the democratic government of Israel. I am unalterably opposed to those rabbinic voices that call on IDF soldiers to refuse military orders of evacuation, claiming that such orders are against absolute Torah law. I humbly insist that this is not the case. The Torah law grants the rights of the sovereign state of Israel to determine its borders, and that a call to refusal on religious grounds is tantamount to a call to civil war. That's his main point. He says, first of all, it's not 100% us. I don't believe it's us there. But even if you disagree with me, nonetheless, what will happen if you disobey orders? If mass religious students decide, if the whole religious community decides they're not going to They're not going to follow orders. What's it going to lead to? Civil war. Israel can withstand the evacuation of settlers from Gaza. It cannot withstand a civil war. At the same time, according to many authorities, the Bible itself does grant the individual soldier a right of conscience, deferment from military service, provided that the military directive is not within the context of a defensive war against an enemy out to destroy it. Again, hence, if a soldier is afraid or tender-hearted, he may return to his home. And the medieval commentators Ibn Ezra and Rabbeinu Bachya interpret these words to mean whether he is afraid to inflict hurt upon another human being, or tender-hearted because he himself may be hurt by the other. Such an individual right of conscious deferment has nothing to do with a religious halachic refusal. Our Bible respects the right of a conscientious objector above the military, as long as the war is not a matter of life and death survival for the nation at that time. Hence, I urge my students and congregants who serve in the IDF to carry out the military orders of evacuation, though they do with heavy hearts and tears streaming down their cheeks. But if they truly believe on an individual level that they cannot bring themselves to do so, and they are willing to even suffer a penalty rather than to evacuate others, who may be their relatives, then halacha respects such an individual decision. The government ought to respect such a personally motivated decision as one of the rights granted in a truly democratic country. So says Rabbi Rifkin, I think they should do it. It's a democratic country. We all live as a part of a democratic country. This is what the government wants. Even though I disagree with it, I tell my students they should follow these orders. Now, not popular in Israel.
No,
today.
Yeah. Isn't the end result still the same as what Rabbi Josephson said last week? He said he didn't agree with it. He's saying I agree with it, but the end result is the same. You have to be a conscientious objector. That's right. I can't do it.
No, he's saying I don't think you should. Rabbi Rifkin is saying I don't think you should be. If Yakuza was saying, at the very best, you should be a conscientious objector. For sure, none of my students ever dreamed of doing such a thing.
I accept the result that Rabbi Rifkin is saying the same thing. If you are tender-hearted, if that's the way
you what he's saying is, you know, the word tender-hearted means...
Cowardly.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Well, he's saying, you can't bring yourself...
Do it, then you should also...
But the big difference is he's saying, I believe you should.
Right.
But if you can't bring yourself to do it, then you have a legitimate excuse. What's the crux of his argument? The crux of his argument is this is our government. We all vote in the government. We lost.
Right. And this is what they decide to do, so be it.
Right.
But you do better now.
Right. Page 4. So this is part of that book, Kato Hapela, that I shared parts of it with you. It's really worthwhile to read the whole thing. And maybe I'll, if anybody's interested to learn it with me, I'm thinking of going through some of it on Shavuos night. It's just very, very fascinating reading. So says the Kafta Rebbe, it was written by Rabbi Shmuel Bar Ilan, who was very, very, very right-wing. I mean, very, very right-wing in Israel. And he wrote this year. He calls the book Kafta Rebbe, which nobody knows what that means, but it's like a button of amazement. I don't know what that means, but... So, a wondrous bate number 2. He's saying, what would a person say? These are people's excuses for following and doing the disengagement. Achein, he says, yes, pesach hamor yesh b'tziyut lapkuda. It's a terrible sin to follow these orders and to disengage and to remove Jews from Gaza. Ach hamor minenu shivatayim hasivuvla. But it's 7 times worse to disobey the orders. Why? Sheminenu petach l'chol ha-chorbanot ha-atidiyim. Because that leaves an opening for tremendous problems later on. Maybe even it will cause the destruction of the state of Israel. Because what you're going to have is, if all the religious don't want to follow the orders, and they don't want to disengage, they're going to say, well, we don't want to do this. So anytime somebody has a moral problem with an order, they're not going to follow it. What?
It's like
right. How many left wingers were there that don't want to go serve in the middle of the Shtachim? They do it anyway. So what kind of country are you going to have? And ultimately, it will cause the destruction of the state. Okay. So his answer is Lo kol isurei haTorah hu tru michshash pikuach nefesh. Not all the isurim of the Torah were permitted because of pikuach nefesh. It says pigiyah beguf chavercha al kidei sakana lechayar. That might be true. He said you're worried about people being killed, you're worried about desecration. That doesn't mean you're allowed to go hurt your friend. That's never mutter. Meaning the Torah allowed you to negate certain halachos. Shabbos in order to save a life. Kashrus to save a life. But the Torah never allowed you to go kill your friend in order to save a life or steal his money. That the Torah never allowed you to do. One second. Skip down. See, at the end of the parentheses. And even to damage your friend's money, the same hasalat asmacha, to save yourself, it's not permitted. So you'll say, oh, we're going to save the country, even though it's usher. You're right, it's forbidden to disengage. But we have to do it in order to save the country from terrible calamities. That's not necessarily true. It's not necessarily permitted. Okay? But what I really wanted to show you, very interestingly, was the footnote. You notice I quoted you the whole footnote. So he writes, Derech Agav, Yesh La'ir, it's worthwhile to raise the issue. So Hanachat Yisod Zu, Amitzotetet Hashkein Ve'erev. He says, this understanding, this underlying assumption, everybody takes the assumption for granted. In Israel, they quote it all the time. Well, if the religious aren't going to serve here, then it's going to cause civil war. It's going to break the fabric of the country of Israel. It's part of the propaganda campaign against the settlers of Gush Katif. He says, who said that if mass numbers of soldiers decide not to follow orders, that's going to break up the Israel Defense Force? You think it would, Dror? So he says, everybody says you have to follow orders, because if you don't follow orders, it's going to ruin the whole thing. Who said? How do you know?
You don't know, but it's a possibility.
It's a possibility. You don't know. He says, maybe Harei B'Giyus Negev Milchama Kolelet. If, let's say, what's the problem? So if you have to draft people for a war, Kimilchamet Yom Kippur, like the Yom Kippur War, Gamashmonolim Hagdolim Biyotel Yitzvashu, even the most left-wing person is going to show up for that war. Gam Hem Chavtei Chayim, they also want to save their lives. Elamai, so what's going to happen? Lo Yitzvashu Yotel Smolanim Eilu Lishimot Shel Bitachon Shutaf Behaganati Nachliyos. So they're not going to show up to defend the Shalemites? What's worse, that or that we're not going to serve it from now on either? Because I'm not going to serve in this disengagement. So you said they're not going to serve then? Well, I don't want to serve now. So who's causing the damage? Who's causing the split? So he's saying, in order so that you shouldn't get a splinter in your foot, so you cut off the whole foot? It's in their argument. Even if these left wingers, they decide we're never going to go, we're not going to enter the draft. Their numbers will be much less than the settlers in Judah and Gaza and Judea and Samaria. So we're not going to build this country. If this is a country that you're going to eject Jews, so maybe all the settlers are going to decide, you know what, we don't want to be in this army either. So you're saying, well, you have to follow orders because otherwise they're not going to want to follow orders when they don't like them. Well, what about us? If we're not going to, you know, who's causing the split? He asks another interesting question at the bottom. Gam the gufo shalinyan. See the third paragraph? Gam the gufo? The gufo inyan shash zeli parkucho shal tzal nir erachok. This whole idea of a breakup of tzahal, of Israel Defense Force, it seems very far-fetched. Bashis utzmaso shal tzahal. The strength of the Israel Defense Force is a very powerful statement. Me'olam lo haya chinuch le'tzaitanut iveret. The Israeli Defense Force was never based on blindly following orders. That's not what the strength of the Israel Defense Force was from. Hamishmat b'tzahal, k'mo b'tzva'ot shar medinot hamitkadmot, the mishmat, what's the mishmat? The lesson, the rule of thumb in tzahal is, eina ela haklipa chitzonit. Oh, I'm sorry, the following orders is only the external shell, the shedrat ha'atzmah amitit shalo. Following orders is only the externals. What's the main part? What's the main strength of Tzahal? Habnuya me'emunat chayala b'tzidkat haderech. Why is the Israel Defense Force so strong? Because its soldiers believe that it is a righteous army. Its soldiers believe in the mission of the army. Hare'ut b'nehem, the friendship between them, v'ramat ha'mushar ha'gvoha shalahem, and their high moral standard and the IDF. Why do they fight so hard? Why do they fight so strong? Why is the IDF so good? Mainly, he says, but not because soldiers follow orders, because they believe in their fight. the posher milchama leman matara, turning the IDF into some goal-oriented arm of the government, shechelak atzum min ha'am klal einu mizdeheima, when most of, a great part of the nation doesn't even identify with the goal, v'chelik min ha'am af nifgamim onayim, it's going to hurt part of the country, v'aday lo terem alechizuko shel tzal, that doesn't help the army, elo lepiru koha mukhlat, it breaks up the army. He says, you know, the army and the IDF was never built on following orders. If you think about it, what's a more important principle? Following orders or believing in the mission? So if you turn the army into a, and this is what something Rabbi Yaakov mentioned also. He said, it's really a military, it's a police job. It's not an army job. If you turn the army into an arm of the Israeli government that does something that's against the real mission of the IDF, what's going to be more destructive? The fact that some people don't follow that order? Or the fact that you changed the whole nature of the army and now people don't believe in it anymore? That's a very good question. That's a very powerful question. So you say, well, you have to follow orders because there's going to be a civil war. They shouldn't be giving that order, because that order isn't what that army is all about. And that order will be more destructive to the IDF than them not following orders in the first place. A very, very powerful motivating argument. Very, very strong words. He says maybe it's better for the army for us not to follow orders, for us to disobey this order. And I think that's exactly what the Gemara is trying to say. When a king gives an order that's against the Torah, oh, you have to follow orders? No, because the Jewish soldier's mission, his strength comes from his belief in God and his underlying understanding that he's doing the mission, the work of God. And when the king comes to him and says to him, go violate the Torah, he's undermining the whole reason why he's fighting in the first place. And so the Torah says, don't follow that order. Follow your heart and follow your conscience. Very, very difficult things to discuss. Very, very tough decisions. And the way Rabbi Yaakov said it, he said, I would have never had to tell my students this in the first place. And the reason he said that was because the whole reason they fight is to defend the land of Israel. And none of them, not one of them, in his mind, and I hope he's right, I'm sure he's right, not one of them could ever imagine doing something that goes against the very nature of the reason why they're serving in the first place. And that's really the crux of the issue. When you ask a soldier to do something like this, for many soldiers, like what he said, if you asked me to hit my father, I would tell you I couldn't. And if you asked me to kick a Jew out of Israel, I can't either. Okay.